This is Batman. Comic Timing is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network. It's what it does, because I'm Batman.
Welcome to episode 46, part 1 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as a rotating panel of guests and myself, Ian Levitsy, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. Well, it's long awaited, but here it is. What will happen in comic books 20 years from now? Keith Holland, H-007 on the forums, Brent Cassina, and Juan de Jesus join myself to discuss everything far in between from what we think is going to happen. Will comic books finally make it into space? Well, actually, there's already plenty of space comics, so that's kind of irrelevant. Here now, Comic Timing. Hey there, folks. My name's Ian Levinstein, and welcome to episode 46 of Comic Timing. Well, on today's episode, we have the long-awaited comics 20 years from now. Where will it be down the line? And, well, joining us today, first let me introduce the regulars, and then I'll get to the special guest on the call. First off, we have the co-host, who has a room much larger than mine. According to his YouTube, it is Brent Cassina.
Hey, guys. If you want to check out how much bigger my room is than Ian's, go on the Comic Timing forums, go to Ian's small-ass room, should be at the top or something. Just watch Ian's video, then watch mine at the bottom, and you'll be like, wow, Ian does live in a closet smaller than Harry Potter.
I hate you. Also joining us on today's show is, for the first time in a while, but he still is sort of a regular to Comic Timing, and he's one half of the Geeks Unite crew, I guess one third technically, is Juan de Jesus, and you can find his work over at geeksunite.libsyn.com and freewebs.geeksunite. What's up, Juan?
Hey, what's up, people? I have an 18-inch RoboCop, but trust me, I'm not a virgin.
Oh, wow, that might be the geekiest opening we've ever had for this show.
Don't you mean joining us is Juan Alberto de Jesus Delgado Conchita Consuela Bagota Robota Mateo Ponce de Leon Rodrigo Gonzalez Smith Ortiz?
You forgot Iman.
Iman, you didn't tell me that the other day? I thought I had it all.
Dude, from now on, you must introduce yourself as that every single episode of Geeks Unite.
There's like 20 names on there.
Also joining us on the call. All right. Let's get away from that before I crack up hysterically for the rest of the call. We're also joined for the first time on the show by Heath Holland, who has himself a brunch every now and then with the Geek Brunch. What's up, Heath?
Hey guys, it's nice to be here all the way from New Zealand. Thanks for having me.
Wait a minute. Heath.
Yes.
Heath.
What? I thought you lived in Alabama or something.
Aren't you from Chicago?
No, from New Zealand.
Dude,
and why do you British accent?
You are Damien Smith's sworn enemy because you're from New Zealand and he's from Australia. So let's get on.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. Let's do that. Yes.
You know, you actually sound a lot like this character from Tiny Toons right now.
Was it that dingo?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Definitely. But where are you really from?
I'm from Alabama.
There you go.
One for me.
I'm a liar. I'm a chronic liar.
It's okay.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay, man. But you still have all your clocks at the European time.
Yes.
All right. Well, welcome to the show, man. And we've been talking about having you on forever, so it's about damn time we actually have you on.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So here's the show topic in depth, straight from the show topic, little thing that I put up on the forums. Comic books have grown and evolved plenty over the years, so much so that it's difficult to imagine where the industry will be 20 years down the line. What changes in distribution do you foresee? Will comic books embrace a digital medium, or will its main production still come from hard copies? Will individual issues make way for a trade-only environment? How will the direct market compare to today's direct market? Perhaps Diamond will have some competition down the road? Well, we want to know what you think. Whether it be comments on DC, Marvel, Independence, or all the above, let's celebrate where our favorite reading material is heading. And plenty of people left their comments there. We even have an audio comment from Matthew Guy we'll play later on the show. So plenty to talk about here. So
he wants somebody fired, doesn't he?
No, actually, surprisingly enough, he doesn't mention anybody being fired, but he does mention plenty about Marvel and DC, which we'll get into once we actually play his comment. But let's start things off in general here, and we'll start it with Heath. Where do you see comic books in 20 years? And again, nice general thing here. We'll go more specific later on.
I don't know.
Okay, Heath Holland.
You heard it here first. He doesn't know.
Seriously, I mean, it's really hard to say. I mean, that's kind of why I suggested it, is because who knows, man? It's to me, it's a tumultuous time right now.
Yeah.
You guys listen to Augie DeBleach's Pipeline podcast?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, today, on today's episode, he would, you know, today, or it might have been yesterday, the whole deal about the Superman, All-Star Superman, no, Superman Confidential, being delayed came out, and, like, people are pissed off about this stuff. Okay, comics are kind of like a niche thing as it is right now. You get, you know, what, like 300,000 sales a month if things are good. You know, those are Civil War
pretty much
numbers. Well, you know, if you're pissing off your fans like this, and you've got them, you know, cursing the distribution and cursing, you know, Dan DiDio and all these things, and that's your hardcore fan base, where is that going to put you down the line 5, 10 years, 20 years if you don't get the fans behind you now? How are you going to grow the medium? It seems like more and more people are leaving it, and we hear this is a great time for comics, but man, I don't know. I'm not really seeing that. I'm kind of seeing that people are getting tired of all these events and crossovers and stuff, and I'm kind of worried about our medium. Honestly, I think that maybe in 20 years it might be a graphic novel-only environment. Mm-hmm. I don't know that we're ever going to lose paper, because I think it's really important to some people to just have paper.
Sure.
But I think things are going to be a lot different. A lot different.
I kind of see the way things are going right now. And again, you've mentioned the fact that there are less readers these days. I mean, come on, back in the 90s, you know, you had like stuff like maybe Spawn number one, or even when Spider-Man came out with McFarlane, you had a million people picking up a book. You know, when was the last time we hit a million people picking up a comic book? It's been a long time now. It's only going to go downhill from here unless they shape things up. I mean, we might come to a point 20 years down the line where the only people picking up comics are Dan DiDio and Joe Quesada.
Yeah, and it seems like to me, instead of going out and trying to get comics to the masses, they've made it even more inside almost. Like DC especially, if you're not a long-term DC reader, you don't know what's going on.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, I agree.
You know, so, you know.
Well, Juan, let me get your take on this, where they're going to be in 20 years.
Well, it's kind of hard to say, especially with the advent of Pullbox Online. If we could find something like an iTunes for comics, I could see paper begin to dwindle, but like Heath said, never die away. Because some people just like having the tangible object in their hand. And frankly, I can't take my laptop on a New York City subway because I don't want to get robbed. And I'm not going to read it on my iPod because I don't want to get robbed. So,
and if you take it to the toilet, you might drop it in.
Hey, my toilet is pretty small and I'm a big guy, right?
Well, you don't want to get to the toilet because you might get robbed.
I might get robbed, yeah. It's a public toilet. Man,
you might want to start a podcast.
No, but if they could find a way, like I was talking with a friend at work, you know, like a piece of cloth or something that could display the panel, and you could flip the panel like you do on the iPhone or the iPod Touch now. Mm-hmm. If they could find a reader like that, I think we might go all digital, because you do have something tangible and you may have a way to back up all of your comics. But right now, I don't think paper will ever die. And frankly, like Heath said, we with the movies, we just began to bring in new people. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, we've dropped the hammer again.
Yeah.
And we've made events and we've pigeonholed people. And so you have to know this in order to do that. And if you didn't buy the previous event, you won't understand this event. So instead of growing our audience, we are beginning to dwindle again. And we need to find some way to build that audience up again. Because if not, comics in 20 years will be the same thing it is right now. A very selective group of people talking amongst themselves and not growing. And I see that as a problem.
Selling 500 copies a month.
Well, I don't know about 500 copies a month. Because, you know, there's some people out there who buy two for the variant cover and the regular edition.
Well, yeah, that's true. Then that means there'll be 250 people buying comic books. Because they'll be
even worse.
There'll be variant covers for all of them, so you'll get.
And they'll be $12.99 a piece.
Yes, yes. Which means,
and they'll all be Joe Quesada covers.
Oh man, but you know what? It's funny. Like, you do mention the fact that paper is never really going to die, and that is kind of a point because we're always going to have paper. Until the day that there are no more trees, we're always going to have paper, which means that it's going to be hard. Like, say, for instance, we're trying to get away from using oil, you know, in our cars and that sort of stuff. We're trying to get away from using gasoline in our cars. We could find a, you know, a new source for this because this is something that's actually dwindling. But paper is never really going to dwindle. We do continue to, you know, replant trees. There are trees that are made specifically for the production of paper that are immediately replenished. This is always going to be out there. So why would anybody decide to go anywhere else?
Yeah. And we're all comic collectors, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you love your back issues, right?
Yeah.
Oh,
I love the smell, you know? I just love the back issues.
It's got that smell you can never quite pass. Brent, what's your take on 20 years?
I think Juan and Heath are pretty much right about we're isolating our audience now with all the big events that are calling upon, you know, past events and all that. So I could see a little bit of that. You know, the technology for the e-reader kind of thing, I can see it being plausible, but I think if we switch over to that, then we're not going to get the storytelling quality that we have today. I think George Perez is going to be bored. I think artists are just going to become lazy and have a standard size panel so that fits the e-reader screen, so you want to have multiple panels on a screen. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? If it's as small as the iPhone kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's going to be that size of panel, and you either turn it you know, long ways or sideways or whatever to get a different panel view. But I mean, I don't see how that would help the industry or the medium at all. I can see maybe the direct market either totally collapsing if Barnes & Noble opens, you know, a comic book shop and all of its chains. I can see the direct market growing if we actually bring new readers in with all these comic book movies and all that. So, I mean, it could be either way. So it's kind of hard to predict. I mean, 20 years ago, did they think that we were going to have all these comic movies? They probably thought that it was going to dwindle and die. And then we had the boom of the 90s followed by the crash of the late 90s or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and then we're kind of having a mini boom again. So, I mean, it could be anywhere.
For all we know, this could bottom out just like it did back in the 80s where we made all those craptacular, you know, like Nick Fury and had those terrible Hulk TV movies where, like, Daredevil was this, like, ninja with, like, black cloth and Thor was, like, this construction worker. You know, like, I mean, like, it wasn't embodying anything at all about the comic medium. They were just basically putting them out. And, I mean, if the quality of the movies continues to go down, and I'm not saying that it's in a bad place now, but it possibly could go down again, well, we're going to stop losing those people that are coming in from the movies entirely.
Well, especially if Marvel lets Mark Steven Johnson direct more of their movies. I mean, he just doesn't help anybody.
That man needs to be shot.
Well, you know what? You know what Marvel needs?
He wrote the movies on his toilet.
This is going to be the running gag of this episode. I have
a toilet fixation.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know who Marvel needs? Yul Bol, obviously. You know,
no. Dear God. Dear God,
if they want all their movies to go straight to DVD, that's a good way to do it.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, you can have more movies like Man-Thing that way.
Oh,
I haven't even seen that one.
What the hell were they thinking, man?
I could even last 5 seconds in that. Just the opening sequence was like, all right, this is stupid. Let me change it. I'd rather see Mansquito than see Man-Thing.
Dude, I'd rather see Man-Spider or like the Spider or whatever the hell it was with Dan Aykroyd where he shot like webbing out of his ass.
Oh yeah,
which they again like one of those movies that they come out with all the time. Like right when the like the big movie's about to come out, they come out with the stinker just to try and fool people into thinking, "Hey, this is totally Spider-Man." We swear, he's
like Transmorphers.
Oh yes, yes, or Snakes on a Train.
Oh,
that was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Nothing to do with Snakes on a Plane whatsoever, but it came out like the day Snakes on a Plane came out. Snakes on a Train came out on DVD. But anyway, let's.
In a Blockbuster now, there's like a 300 ripoff called Nomad, and it's got Nomad, and it's written in blood, just like 300, and it's got the same color tone on the
Mark
cover.
Mark Dacascos is in it, yeah.
Well, as long as you they didn't name it 003.
As long as it's not Rotor. Does anyone remember that?
No, I don't.
No.
Oh, please.
Explain.
Look it up when you get a chance.
Explain.
It is a movie made in 1989. And it is a ripoff of RoboCop and a Terminator where they're mixed together,
mm-hmm.
right? And it is so bad. I saw it once on the Sci-Fi Channel when Sci-Fi was like picking up business.
Yeah.
And ROTOR stands for like robot operating under whatever, whatever. It is so stupid. You could look it up on Wikipedia. People look it up. It is such a bad movie, such bad acting, and the same actor plays five different roles, and no one notices the difference. And
it's not a Martin Short film?
No, it isn't. No. That would be entertaining.
Well, you know what? Robot just sounds like MODOK to me.
Oh. Please don't do that.
Well, and I am looking forward to the Man Iron that comes out when Iron Man comes out. You know, it'll be a guy who turns into an iron.
Man of Iron is what it'll be.
Man of Iron.
It's like I'm walking through Chinatown and I see Spider-Man.
What is it, James Spader dressed up like Spider-Man?
Oh my God, with that hair and the glasses. It's Daniel Jackson. No, it's Spider-Man.
I'd watch that.
All right. We're totally going off on a tangent here that I don't think we ever wanted to be on, so let's roll back a little bit. Mm-hmm. Where do you think the movies are going to be in 20 years? Because that's kind of as important as the comic books here. I mean, you know, we're sort of hinting at the fact that they might go downhill, but do you see comic book movies being as effective 20 years down the line as they are now? Because obviously they are going to fall eventually, but maybe they'll still at least be around. Heath, do you see them being around?
Yeah, I think they'll be around, but I think they'll be out of fresh ideas by then.
Okay. Like so by then, they'll probably have gone all the way to like the Malibu properties and like all back.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you can only do so many properties. You know, you've got the big ones out of the way. You've got Watchmen coming out. They've mm-hmm. done V for Vendetta. What is it going to be after that? You know, are you going to be doing another Howard the Duck? Or not that there's anything wrong with Howard the Duck. I'm just saying.
Duck, you know, sex.
You're going to start scraping the bottom of the barrel for movie ideas. You can only go to the same well so many times. So
we're going to have Crisis on Infinite Earths, the miniseries. And then we're going to have an Infinite Crisis movie.
All I'm saying is like,
just
look
start
at
doing it event comics.
Yeah. All I'm saying is like, look at Superman 1, look at Superman 2, then look at 3 and look at 4.
And then
look at Batman 1, Batman 2, then Batman Forever, and Batman and Robin.
Those movies didn't happen.
Yeah.
I close my eyes whenever they're repeated on TBS for three straight days.
Well, they're not called Batman and Robin. It's called Batman and Nip.
Nicole Kidman, you're like a statue.
My parents are dead. Sorry.
I hate everything.
That's sort of a reference that ends up on every single episode of Comic Timing, whether we want it to or not. Eventually, somebody says, my parents are dead. There are only so many movies you can make until you do start making, like, say, like, you know, X-Men, Fall of the Mutants, or, you know, like X-Men, The Phalanx Covenant. You know, they're going to run out of things to do eventually. I mean, sure, they can create their own straight-to-movie adaptations, which they have done. I mean, because obviously, like, the X-Men movies aren't really based on any particular Marvel property except for the third one with the Phoenix Saga. Yeah, I mean, like, they are going to have to go more original, I guess, for those stories.
Kilowog and Chip will have their own road picture, be like the new buddy cop.
Oh, that'd be awesome. I'd
lethal
see that.
Lethal Green Lantern weapon is what it'll be.
Lethal Ring.
Yeah, Lethal Ring. That's good.
Yeah.
You know, in 20 years, they'll be doing a remake of Batman Begins. Mm-hmm. Or, like, you know, and they'll have, like, Eli Roth or somebody doing it. You know, because they're remaking everything now. So they'll probably still be doing that then. They probably won't even wait that long. They won't wait 20 years. They'll just.
Well, they didn't remake Superman. They just kind of sucked the stick. Oh. I'm not afraid to say it. Batman Begins was a good reboot. That if the DC movies continue on the road that Chris Nolan has it, you know, taking the property seriously while honoring its roots, if DC remains with that, unlike Marvel, who is just like, here, put it out, right? If DC takes this time to look at what the character is, the foundation of the characters, and stories that people will enjoy, stories that are entertaining, that give you everything you need to know about the character, then the movies will be successful. And that's where I think DC slightly has the edge over Marvel. Marvel has the quantity out there. Mm-hmm. But Daredevil, Elektra, Ghost Rider, and let me not say Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. starring the Hoff, are not exactly Academy Award winners.
Yes, but now, but it did have the Hoff.
It did have the Hoff, you know, and the Germans loved it.
Yes. One path that I do want to go down here it only took them, it took them less than 10 years to remake Batman. It took Marvel 3 years to remake Hulk. These seem to be, you know, movies that can be made over and over again and done in different styles. I mean, Brent, how long do you see it taking until they start remaking movies that have already been huge here? Like, say, would you expect there to be like a Spider-Man remake about 10 years down the line?
Maybe in 15. I mean, they're going to have to do something like that because, you know, I don't think Tobey Maguire is going to want to do it for another 10 years. He can't. Obviously, he's going to get old.
Sure.
So whenever they have to recast it the second time, if he doesn't come back for 4, I think they'll probably redo it or something.
They'll get a guy
2099 or something.
Yeah, they'll get a guy that looks like Tobey Maguire, and they'll have Bryan Singer direct it, and it'll basically be like he went away for a while, and now he's come back, and Mary Jane's married somebody.
Spider-Man went swinging in the Amazon for 5 years, and then he came back.
Yeah, and he's got a little spider kid that he doesn't know about at first.
Well, his name is going to be Moby Tguire, obviously.
Yeah.
Oh, that's Jake Gyllenhaal. Oh, there we go.
Oh. Hey, well, for all we know, they could be heading there for 4. You know, that's been the rumor since, like, Spider-Man 2 that Jake Gyllenhaal was going to take over.
I'd be fine with that.
I'd be okay with that, too. I mean, he looks the part.
Shia LaBeouf.
Ooh, man.
He could do the quips, but I cast him as Tim Drake in the Batman movies.
That'll work. That'll work.
You don't think so?
No. I think that'll work. I think that'll work perfectly. I think that he would work really well. I don't see them really bringing Robin into the movies, though.
No, not in this universe, not in the Nolanverse. So.
Yeah, you know, until they go.
And I coined that. I'm the first to say that. So, copyright on Nolanverse.
Yeah, I mean, if the Wachowski brothers, or excuse me, the Wachowskis.
No,
I can't call them Wachowski brothers anymore. But if the Wachowskis decide to remake Batman, say 10 years down the line, there will be Robin in it, and probably be Jason Todd. Not, you know, Tim Drake. I could sort of see them going along those lines. But yeah, with the current Nolan films, not going to happen, definitely. Let's actually switch back to the comics, and let's talk a little bit about distribution. We were talking about paper. Now that everybody has broadband, it's pretty damn easy to bring up high-quality images onto a computer. Do you see, like, webcomics evolving into full comic books? I mean, we do have occasional ones out there. Marvel and DC have their online comic books they have now, and I know DC is actually making an entire line of webcomics now, but, I mean, where do you see webcomic books going? I mean, do you see them becoming more like regular comic books, or do you see them continuing to be like the 2 or 3 panel strips that webcomics are now? We'll start with you, Juan.
I think they'll start as the small 2 to 3 panel, and then as the talent pool grows and as the demand grows, I think we'll get like a full 8-panel to 9 panel spread.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll probably be weekly, or if possible, and, you know, a good writer is out there, they could get 2 to 3 panels out on time, or they have done a full 22 pages, they could release it in little 2 to 3 panel strips every day. And, you know, pretty soon after a while, you have a buffer in between months, and you could have full web comics available.
That'll work. That'll work for me. Yeah. Brent, agree, disagree?
I don't know. I think the appeal of web comics is that you don't have to do 2 or 3 strips or something, or, you know, full rows of panels to get to something funny. You can have like 3 panels just like in the newspaper and have something funny. And then if the less work they have to do, the faster they can put them out. I think that's the appeal of web comics. Mm-hmm. I think once they get to the point where it's, you know, long drawn out, then it won't be web comics. It'll be comics on the web. You know, so it won't be the same. So I can see them staying in, like, in the same area that they're at.
Yeah, but, I mean, do you see comics on the web perhaps replacing web comics somewhere down the line?
I could maybe replace them, but I still think we're going to have comics in paper. And as long as we have comics on paper, we're going to have web comics.
Okay.
As 2 separate entities.
Okay, cool. That works for me. Heath, what about you when web comics?
Yeah, I completely agree with Brent. I think that the appeal of the webcomic is that it's not something you have to go out and distribute, make. You know, you don't have to make an actual comic. It's something you could just, you know, throw up 3 panels or 5 panels, or you could do a webcomic every day if you wanted to. You know, it's supposed to be easy and easy to get to the people. I think that's why they do it. So, I don't know. I think that I don't ever see them becoming comic size or... Uh-huh. What are we talking, 32 pages, 22 pages?
That's something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I don't really see that happening because I think the appeal of the webcomic is just short, sweet, in and out.
Yeah, well, I just read, actually, the first volume of the Penny Arcade collected from the – that's the first year, I guess, of Penny – actually, first 2 years of Penny Arcade collected into one volume. And it's funny because I learned that he – the artist of Penny Arcade to this day, he tried using a Wacom tablet to draw the comic book and decided that it's still easier for him to draw it on paper first, scan it in, and then color it. I find that kind of interesting because, you know, it seems like no matter how much computers are becoming the current medium, people still use paper even for webcomics. Mm-hmm. You know, it's then scanned in and then they do their thing to it. So, I mean, even there's still a bit of, like, regular comic book in webcomic today. And I have a feeling that's probably going to continue as time goes on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's actually go to the pricing a little bit. I guess we could talk both web and on and in our hands, mostly in our hands, though. Yeah, it's skyrocketed already. All right, we have comic books that come out today that are a quote-unquote oversized translation. They add 10 pages and they put it out for $3.99. It's already to the point where you can buy 10 comic books and spend $25. And, I mean, to me, that's not cost-effective. Unless we go into some sort of inflation, it's not really going to make any sense for people to spend that much money every single time when they go to the comic shop. And it's probably going to come a point where people are going to have to either, you know, put up or shut up and just go entirely to the DCBS route or, mm-hmm. you know, just buy less comic books. Where do you see pricing going for comic books? Do you see it going up any farther than, say, another dollar or so? Or do you see it pretty much just sticking around at $2.99, $3.99 where it is now?
I think they're certainly going to go up. I mean, as time goes on, we're going to have a certain amount of inflation. So obviously the price is going to rise there. But I think with the general trend with, I think it was last year, 2 years ago, DC upped their books from like $2.50 to $2.99.
Yeah.
And then, you know, 52 was $2.50 and now Countdown's $2.99. I think it's just going to go up, you know, until the point where they start losing money because people aren't ordering anymore because they cost too damn much. And when you start losing money by raising the price of something, then you know you've done something wrong. Mm-hmm. So I think we're going to go up to that point, and then they're going to start lowering the price maybe back to what it was or back to a point where they figure that people will come back and order the same amount of books and they'll regain their profits. That's
so you're saying you think they'll raise them until people won't pay it anymore?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, once it gets to like five – I mean, it's already half of $5 for a comic book, more than half.
Mm-hmm.
So more, if it goes to $5, obviously – John Mayo is going to stop because he buys a lot of books. And I mean, at DCBS and stuff, their price there is going to be more than what it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But at the same time, with the inflation rates and all that, maybe you'll be able to afford a $5 comic book.
I know.
You know, because inflation will go up and you'll be able to get paid more, even though things cost more at the same time.
Mm-hmm. I know exactly
what
we
have. It just depends.
I got the solution. Destroy the euro. Let's bomb Europe. Destroy the market that has become the strength of the European Union. That's the only reason why a dollar is worth anything. No, but seriously.
America,
That's great. I get at least 150 to 200 downloads from – well, okay, maybe like 150, I guess, or maybe even 100 from Europe every episode. So that's terrific. I just lost 100 listeners there. Thanks a lot.
No, don't worry.
America,
they don't want to
fuck
pass the freedom prize. One.
These colors don't bleed. No. I'm being facetious there, but I'll tell you this. I just got an 8-pound box of comic books delivered to my job.
Uh-huh.
So the price going up has forced me to go to DCBS.
Yeah.
Because I'd love to go to Midtown or Hanley's. The problem is 10 books equates to, like you said, $25.
Mm-hmm.
And once $25, and then you have miniseries and things that you want to get because they pique your interest, becomes $35, becomes $100. And if you want to pick up a trade, there goes $20 on top of whatever you're spending. So with the advent of DCBS, they force people to go one route. And pretty soon, if they keep putting the price up, they're going to drive these small mom-and-pop shops out of business because they only thrive on selling Marvel and DC, right? Let's say not in, you know, not independent comic books or smaller publishers.
Mm-hmm.
And if their books cost $5 – a 10-year-old kid can afford a $5 book. At least I couldn't afford a $5 book when I was 10 years old because my allowance was $2 a week.
Yeah.
You know, and I was poor. So whoever out there is laughing, I was poor. even now, that the cost of 10 comic books a week, which is less than what I would buy if I would go to Midtown, is still, it's pretty cheap. It's not cheap, you know. It's more than an hour of work for me, you know, and I don't want to work 3 or 4 hours to pay for comic books. Comic books are something that should be accessible, and that's also why the population isn't growing, because the price keeps going up, and pretty soon people just can't collect.
Yeah.
And they're not going to get a return. You know, they're not, a $5 book isn't going to sell for $6.
Yeah.
Because that's how much you buy the back issue for. You buy the back issue for almost 75 cents more than what you pay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
You're not going to get that return when you sell it back. You're not going to get that return on eBay unless the issue is worth something or is rare to get. So $5 comic books will probably kill the comic book, not completely, because there are still people who are going to pay for it, but it's going to deal a really big blow to the comic book world.
Well, just to give you an example here, today, because I needed to go over to my college to pick up a book, and because I was over there, I went to my old comic shop, Bulletproof, in Brooklyn, as opposed to going to Midtown. And mm-hmm. I had my discount waiting for me at Midtown. I had hit that, but I figured, okay, whatever, I'll just do it next month, or next mm-hmm. week, that is.
Exactly. You see what you just said?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I used to hit my discount every week.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, today I spent $26 on 11 comic books. And that was only because I had a 20% discount and still do at Bulletproof. They give me a 20% discount on my books. Had I not chosen to get the 20%, I would have spent about $34, $35.
Yeah.
Which
that's a lot of week. That's a lot of money per week.
That is a lot of money per week.
And what Brent and Heath don't know is that for Midtown, to get once you hit your limit is $100.
Yeah.
Once you hit $100, they'll take $20 off of your order.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
explain that.
Okay.
You have to spend $100.
Yeah.
And once you hit $100, they'll take $20 off.
A week, $100 a week or a month?
No. It doesn't matter how much time. The minute that you spend $100, you get $20 on the house.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Oh, okay.
So if you're spending $100, you get $20 off. You're still spending $80.
Yeah.
Is this in addition to your discount, or is that your discount?
There is no discount.
That is the discount I've been talking about.
That is a discount.
Yeah. The comic shop I went to over the summer in Orlando has something similar. For every $10 you spend, you get a punch on a punch card
mm-hmm.
with 10 slots. So, like, you get $100, you get 15.
Yeah.
The only downside is they don't log it in a system for you. If I spend $35 a week and I hand in my punch card,
yeah.
I don't get 4 stamps. They don't round up. I get 3 stamps.
Mm-hmm.
A couple weeks I spent $39. I only got 3 stamps.
Uh-huh.
So I still lost money on, you know, it wasn't a full 15% discount.
Mm-hmm.
I still lost money on that.
Yeah. That's not really the business plan they really should be shooting for. I mean, they got to do something better than that. An idea that I have in my head, and this is something that I really wish that they would think of doing somewhere down the road. Hopefully, 20 years from now, they'll catch on. One of the reasons why we switched to DCBS is because they offer so much discounts on things. For example, mm-hmm. 50% off most comic books, or at least 40% off most comic books, week after week. And the number ones are usually as cheap as 75 cents. If you're getting on a new title or if you're starting a new run on something, you'll be able to get a discount, a super discount of about 75% on that comic book. If DC and Marvel were to start doing this for the actual comic books as they produce, for example, like what they did with Fantastic Four when Wade and Waringo came on, they offered a 25-cent issue, and that worked wonders for Marvel Comics. They got bunches and bunches of people to go to the comic store that day and pick up Fantastic Four. If they were to do this on a regular basis for number ones or for at least just issues they want people to read, I guarantee you they will make as much money as they would if they were to charge full price, and it would work out great for them. That's a business plan I want to see them start using at least 20 years down the line. And I don't know whether you guys feel that this would actually be pliable for them, but to me, I think it would make a big difference.
Well, I mean, the Countdown special that launched Infinite Crisis in Brave New World, 80 pages for $1,
mm-hmm.
I think those things sold like gangbusters. They probably made their money back on that.
Oh yeah.
If they lowered comics prices down, maybe they'd make more money. Yeah, I'm not talking like 25 cents. I'm thinking by a dollar or so. Mm-hmm. They'd make a lot more money.
It's the perfect price point.
Oh yeah.
I think so.
I've always been a proponent of the $1.99 price point because that's the price point I had for most of my life. I started really collecting comic books in the 90s. That's the price point I knew. It was $1.25, then it was $1.50, then it was $1.99 for the longest time. And $1.99 for me is perfect in my pocket. I will spend that week after week.
If they put it down to $1.99, I could tell you I would go out and I would keep getting the Black Adam miniseries. I would get Booster Gold. Mm-hmm. I would get the new Outsider series that come out. I would get all those crappy Countdown to Adventure, Mystery Space, whatever. I would get all of those because they're $1.99. And I'd still be spending the same amount of money, but I'd be getting more books.
Yeah. What were you going to say? You know what I mean?
Give me cheaper paper.
Yeah.
If the paper quality is what's keeping – I understand it holds up better over time and everything else. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. I remember the days of newsprint. I remember if your hands were a little bit, you know, oily, you would blotch the paper.
Yeah.
And I had no problem with my Night Quest issues being blotched. I had no problem with my Death of Superman issues being blotched. Uh-huh. I feel bad now that I'm a serious collector and they're a little blotched. But you know what? At the point in time, you read it for the story. Give me cheaper paper and lower the price point. And that way, you not only give me what I want, but you're making the product available to people who normally wouldn't buy it because, oh, it's a comic book. Why am I going to pay $4 or $5 for it? Mm-hmm. $2, people will pay $2. And I think everyone here agrees that people will pay $2 like nothing. All right, yeah. It's $2. What could I lose?
Hell yeah.
Go in there. And if, you know what? You may hook. Yeah.
If you could get 9 books for $18 again, that'd be great. Fantastic.
And if you want nicer paper, maybe the trades, like they have the premier hardcovers mm-hmm. and stuff, just put nicer mm-hmm. paper in that. That's the one you archive, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Monthly comics used to just be about, you know, getting the story that month. Mm-hmm. The trades are now, the way the market has shifted, people are waiting for trades. So save the trades for your archive material of, you know, extra stock paper. Yeah, all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. Just get the monthlies out there as cheap as you can and get them in people's hands. Bring people into it.
I think
put the comics at the Walmart. Put them in the Toys R Us next to the Spider-Man figures.
Oh,
get them out there.
Hell yeah. I would love that. And I think we're going to get to a point where the hardcore collectors like us, if they were to do this, and I think they really should, will be collectors like we used to. However, we'll be collectors for the trades.
Yeah.
You know, we'll know that when we have these trade paperbacks, this is the pristine collection that we wanted. And the other books that we get every single week, every single month, whatever, were really great reads. And we spent the money on them, and we're glad that we did. But then there's something that we'd be okay handing to our kids. And then there'd be something that we're okay handing to, say, our friends. Because mm-hmm. we wouldn't be afraid of people, you know, like damaging our pristine, perfect, you know, collection, you know, because if the paper's cheaper, we're going to care less about the condition. And you know what? That's good. That's a good thing.
Or we could afford to buy a new one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
You may get more than one sale out of it.
Oh yeah. 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 Because I'm already thinking to myself, because I'm a collector, I was sorting comics today. That's what I did most of the day. I vacuumed, I threw out some magazines, and I sorted my comic books. And I'm looking at my comic books, and I realize there's some stuff that I haven't read here yet. There's some stuff that I put away already. And I'm thinking to myself, how long is it going to take me to reread these? You know, mm-hmm. they're in the bags and boards. How long is it going to take me to reread these? It's probably going to be a while. Because I buy comics every week, because I get my DCBS orders, most of these comics that I'm buying are not going to see the light of day for at least another year or so until I decide, hey, let's go check this out again. You know, and I'm not quite sure that's the way comic books should be.
Mm-hmm.
Comics have become more collectibles as opposed to just something to read.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I blame the 90s
entirely. Don't you enjoy putting your books away in bags and boards? I mean, isn't that something you take joy in?
Oh, yeah. No,
I know I like doing it.
Yeah, I like it. I enjoy
it. And filing it stuff and knowing that it's organized.
I was doing that too, but however, I like it a hell of a lot better when they're already bagged and boarded as opposed to having to do it myself, because at Bulletproof, one of the advantages of me going to Bulletproof Comics over Midtown Comics sometimes is the fact that every single comic book on their racks has already been bagged and boarded, and you get that bag and board for free. They're giving you the regular price of the comic book with the bag and board, and you get it for free. That would be even better for me. Because I like the idea of, you know, putting my comic books in bags and boards, but it'd be a hell of a lot better for me if they were already in them. That's another thing that I feel that the comic shops are going to have to start doing to give me more of a reason to go there.
You know?
That's the thing I disagree with on. Because I went to my comic shop today, mm-hmm. and I got my stack of books, and you know, I can put them in my car, and I can come home to my dorm room, mm-hmm. and I can just pull them out of the bag, flip them open them up. If I got to pull it out of the bag and board, I don't want to do that. There's a comic book shop in Orlando that does that, and I hate buying weekly comics from them because they're already taped and stuff, and I got to untape the tape, and then I got to pull the bag out.
Well, they don't tape them. They don't take them. They don't tape them. They're just bags and board.
Okay, well, the one that does it by me tapes them. And then, you know, you got to put them back in without getting the tape stuck on the comic. Oh, it's a pain in the ass. For my weekly comics, I don't care. And they're already in pretty good condition anyway when I get them. So, you know, I don't know. That's me. What were you saying, Heath?
I was just going to say that I think that the local comic book shop is at death's door.
Yeah.
As soon as Joe America or Joe England or whoever's listening, as soon as the average person realizes that they can go to a website and they can get 40 to 50% off of anything. The reason I went to my local comic book shop is because I didn't know about DCBS. As soon as I found out I could be getting twice as many comics for the same amount of money, it's just a matter of making your money stretch as much as you want it to, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't particularly feel a loyalty to my local comic book shop, you know? They're a business, but I have to go where I can get the most comics. I mean, this is a hobby that I enjoy. You know, I'm going to go where I can get the most stuff for my money. Mm-hmm. And I think as soon as most people realize that there are websites that you can get your comics at so cheap, the local comic book shop is going to either have to fight tooth and nail to just keep its business or it's going to go under. And I don't really know how they can fight it because they don't have a lot of capital. Well, I mean, what can they do? They're kind of at the mercy of Marvel and DC because that's their main breadwinners. And with prices going up, what can they do?
And they face penalties for reorders, you know,
that's
final
right.
cutoffs. They're not, you know, what DCBS does, from what I understand, is when everyone submits their order or submits their shopping cart, they order the numbers that they got the orders for.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's why it's very hard to cancel an order in specific, because they wholesale it just for the amount that they need. So DCBS has a system where it's not going to get stuck with back issues. These stores get stuck with back issues, and then they have to not just pay rent to run the store. Then now they got to pay storage somewhere because they have 20 or 30 long boxes that don't fit on the floor. They got to either annex a smaller shop or, you know, get a storage and put the stuff in storage and then pay someone to go back and forth. And there's a lot more overhead for a brick-and-mortar shop.
Yeah.
Than there is for the online store. Mm-hmm. And that's why maybe 20 years down the line, maybe everything will be online. Unless you're a huge chain, you're kind of at death's door, like you said.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but around here, back issues are dead. People don't buy back issues anymore.
Yeah.
That's what trades are for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, Midtown Comics, I would never, ever buy a back issue from Midtown Comics.
They're overpriced.
They're overpriced. The minute that they're in the bag, they pretty much add 50 cents. Whether mm-hmm. it was a popular comic book, whether it was, you know, random miniseries number 4.
Wow.
They're all going to get the same treatment. And
you know what's crazy about that is you can't get that for those comics. Most of those comics now are like worth a dollar or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The market doesn't hold cover value for comics like that.
Hey, I was able to get the full run of, well, at least what I needed, a Manhunter, in dollar bins. You know,
yeah.
That says something. Manhunter is a pretty new comic book still.
Yes,
and,
it is.
You know, issues 1 through, 28 or something like that, you probably find all in dollar bins at conventions.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a testament to how little people give a damn about back issues these days.
Yeah.
There's a reason why a lot of record shops have gone out of business. That's because Amazon.com happened. Amazon.com gave people a reason to not go to the store for their CDs. Then iTunes came around and gave people a brand new place to get their music where they didn't even have to buy discs. They could just go ahead and download songs to play on their MP3 player, on their computer, whatever. With comic books, there's going to come to a point where comic books are going to find their Amazon.com. It might be DCBS, might be some other company that comes along, but it's going to find their Amazon.com where it's just going to come to a point where no way the small little comic shops are going to be able to survive because of online distributors that are able to put things at discounts because of the way they do their business. Comichole.com shut down their distribution of new comic books. Why did they do that? Because they had a policy that was different than DCBS's. What Juan was talking about, how they only get a certain amount of comic books in, the way that Comichole was doing it is that they were allowing people to get their comic books up to about a week before they were hit the stands. So through a distributor, they were getting their comic books in and then sending them out to people. That was not cost-effective anymore. It wasn't getting the comic books out to people in time, so they stopped selling their regular comic books like that. And DCBS's model is probably going to be the model that we're going to see. You're all going to have to make your, you know, your choices 2 or 3 months in advance through previews, get them on DCBS, get them anywhere, and buy your comic books that way eventually.
Yeah. I also see that as a problem. I don't know if anyone else here sees that as a problem. And I appreciate DCBS, and I love them, and I hope they give you a sponsorship even. But maybe they'll be a little pissed off at this. I want to order my comics online through a system like DCBS, but you tend to spoil a lot, especially from the major publishers, if you're a big fan of the major publishers. Every single storyline that's coming out. Uh-huh. Not so much for the independents. The independents, they're there to sell you the book, and you get just enough information to pique your interest to buy the book. So the independent section, I don't see a problem with. But maybe we shouldn't get a magazine that was not created for us per se. Maybe we should get a version that is maybe more like a catalog than something that's supposed to be given to a merchant for them to order. Because the previews are written in a way where they will know, hey, I got to order this much because this will happen. Well, maybe we should get a different version of previews.
DCBS's website actually gives you a choice. And again, I'm not trying to plug DCBS crazily here, but they give you a choice of views for the listings. Whether or not you get just a view with a cover and a small little blurb that, you know, cuts off where you don't even get the full blurb, or you can get your full complete view, which is more previews-like. I think that that might be sort of what you're aiming at, Juan, the fact that you don't want to actually see, you know, every little bit of detail about what's coming out. You just want to know what's coming out. They do have something like that on their site. You know, you're not stuck with the full previews preview, as it were. So it's possible you might actually get somebody coming out that maybe challenges previews eventually with an online type thing where they just give you a list of comic books, but I kind of doubt that. Previews really does have a lock on the market right now. I mean, would you guys like to see a competitor for previews out there? Brett, would you like to see a competitor for previews?
I don't know. I don't read previews. I go through the solicitations and I say, okay, well, you know, on the websites when they come out, basically for Marvel and DC and anybody else, I kind of just pay attention if it's coming out that week. IGN does something every week where they do a cover gallery and they'll put up the cover for every book that's coming out that week. I'll go through it and I'll make my list. Most of them will be on my subscription list, but I can go, oh, okay, I'll look to see if this is there. You know, I'll put it on my list, so then when I go to the store, I have a list of what I want to get. So, I mean, I'm always on the lookout for new stuff down the horizon, but I don't have to put in my order. I just have to add it, go get it, and then if I like it, I'll add it the next week.
Yeah, that's kind of the way that I go about things now, too. Like, I make my DCBS order. On a DCBS order, I make the choices of books that I know I can wait for, and then I go to the store with a Excel sheet printout of all the books that I actually want to buy in store and pick those up and then leave. Because I know, like, what I can wait for and what I can't, which sort of makes sense there. And I go through, again, the Midtown Comics website because they do have something similar to what Juan's talking about also, where they just have a list of, you know, a list of covers and a list of what needs to be done there and all's well. But, Heath, do you think there would ever be a previews competitor out there, or does previews get the job done?
I love previews. I think it really gets the job done. I can't tell you how many things I've discovered through previews, just from flipping through in the back section, you know, independent stuff that I never would have even thought about, that just the ad catches me, or they do those little spotlights and stuff. I love previews. I mean, they do it for me, so I don't really see the need for anything else.
Okay.
And I don't really think they spoil anything. If you, like, if it's something I know I'm going to read, like, if I'm going through and I see, like, you know, Invincible or something like that, I'm not going to read the blurb because I know that I'm going to get it. So I just keep on going.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, Marvel has their own previews type thing now, right, which is separate from previews?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can sort of see down the line. I don't know if this is actually going to happen, but I could see possibly DC deciding to go the Marvel route and have their listings in another book that's just made by DC, and eventually previews gets to a point where they are just indies, and I'd be okay with that.
I think that's probably just a matter of time.
Yeah. I would pick up previews on a regular basis if it was just indies to me. I mean, Juan, would you have a different take on previews if it was just indies?
Yeah, I would. I wouldn't mind reading it because, frankly, the indie section of previews is the one that I tend to go to first just because I want to see something different. And they also, especially through DCBS, you get a bigger discount on most indies than you do in stores.
Yeah.
So that's just something you can't argue with.
Well, I guess it's just sort of going to get to the point where whether or not DC feels like they're getting their money's worth out of previews. You know, whether or not they feel they can do it better themselves or whether or not they want to stick with previews. It probably will get to a point where they're going to say, hey, why don't we just do this ourselves? Why are we bothering to go through a second party?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to stop here, actually, just to play quickly Matthew Guy's audio comment he sent on in. So let's have a audio comment here from Matthew Guy. Enjoy.
Hello, this is Matthew Guy speaking. Answering the question, where do I think the comic industry will be in the next 20 years? For one, comics will be more expensive. My guess is anywhere from $5 to $6 mainstream to $7 to $8 independent. The standard comic book size will shrink yet again from 22 pages to 16 to 20 pages. Fail will be up to 150 in 20 years. Marvel goes through its second bankruptcy and is merged with another company called Image, and is called MI, Marvel Image. This new company will be number two to DC after several crisis books. The DC universe is rebooted yet again, and everything that we know in comics changes yet again. The question is what happens to the industry? Well, I think it'll fall, at least in print media. It's the standard comic book size and resources in 20 years, comics will go digital. And with that, that will bring about new readers, but not in the print media. Standard comic books will still be around, just a lot less so. And finally, I guess, is that DC's on top, and that there's 5 Superman books, and there's only one goddamn X book. It's called Uncanny. Not Uncanny X-Men, just Uncanny. And it's easy to follow. Well, that's my guess. That's my hope, anyway. Well, only time will tell. Thanks. Hope you enjoyed this. Matthew Guy, signing off.
All right, so some interesting thoughts there from Matthew. Let's actually touch a little bit on that before we get back into the flow of the episode. He did mention that actually an interesting thing about Marvel and Image combining into one company. I mean, it's not something I really thought of, but is that anything that you guys could see happening down the road? I mean, obviously, a lot of the guys who are in Image now were in Marvel years ago, so it certainly would be a homecoming for them. But I'm not quite sure if Marvel would really get into enough financial troubles where that would happen.
I hope not.
I hope not, too. But, I mean, do you see this being a benefit for either of the companies, Heath?
No, I don't. Image is, like, you know, creator-owned. Image is basically just a distribution center now for these indie guys to get their stories out there, you know? Yeah. Like all these, it's their passion projects. And mm-hmm. if Marvel came in and took over, I don't know what that would do to it.
Ooh.
You know. Think about it.
Well, I mean, they've been doing well with the Icon line. And, I mean, that's mostly creator-owned.
There's only two, right?
Three, I think.
Is there three?
Hours and Criminal. What's the third one?
Well, there's Criminal... Well, Kabuki. Kabuki's under the Icon
line. That doesn't count. That never comes out.
Oh, come on. I mean, it comes out eventually. And also, Oh damn! Wasn't there something else that was recently started on there? But I could be thinking.
It's Straczynski's new project that never got out.
Oh,
Icon's a vanity label for their top tier guys.
Let me kiss Bendis and Brubaker because they're writing most of our books label.
Yeah, hey guys, sign another 5-year exclusive. Here, you can have an Icon book.
Really? Awesomeness.
Yeah. So you feel that it would be a detriment to Image to sign up with Marvel? Okay, cool.
Yes, I do.
The only way I can see that happening is if there was a company that started up that had a better deal than Image or a better way of doing things, and all of the, you know, The Walking Dead or whatever jumped ship over to there. Mm-hmm. And then maybe there are a couple titles that – well, not really. I don't see Marvel and Image ever buying each other out.
Yeah.
Because Marvel can't really buy the Image titles. Spawn does not belong to Image.
Yeah.
Savage Dragon doesn't, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, I mean, those are all creator-owned, yeah.
I can see Image dying, but going with Marvel, not really.
I kind of don't see it coming to that point. I mean, Image Comics, they've made enough of a name for themselves where there are going to continue to be a flow of people to Image Comics for years to come. As for Marvel, I mean, it was one thing when Marvel bought up Malibu, but that was a different story.
I was about to bring that up, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was...
Look how that turned out.
Yeah, it turned out terribly for Malibu because Marvel decided, hey, let's bring them into the Marvel fold. Yeah. I'm afraid that would happen with Image Books. Like, for example, I don't want to see Noble Causes. Okay, good. Yeah, all right. So
and isn't it Jamie? What's his name? Farber, James Farber? Farber? James Farber.
Jay Farber or something, yeah.
Jay Farber. Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
It was on the tip of my tongue. There we go.
Okay, so...
That's an Image still has an Image verse.
Sort of. I mean, they do have their characters cross over from time to time, but they seem to sort of reset things every 5 or 6 years and then hope that the Imageverse can get restarted, but it doesn't really work.
I think that the characters are just too far apart for them to try to integrate them the way Marvel or DC would.
Yeah, I agree.
They try it.
It's just like Vertigo. Vertigo can never be integrated just because each specific title specifically takes place on their own version of Earth.
Yeah. And for that matter, people, please stop asking that question at conventions, okay? I do not want to see the Vertigo universe as a 52nd Earth or something like that.
Right? It can't, just because Why the Last Man cannot take place with Swamp Thing or Constantine.
Exactly. They're,
you know, maybe you could argue Constantine and Swamp Thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But not Why the Last Man. Not Fables. It just can't happen.
Oh, come on. You could have the vampire Batman show up and scalped.
That'd be awesome, though, wouldn't it? That'd be awesome.
Who's that Indian dude that's currently in Batman now? What's he called? Ravenclaw or something? Little Raven?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What I don't like about Vertigo, though, is that they keep taking DC characters. Madame Xanadu has a Vertigo series coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Why? I thought she was a DC character. Does that mean she's going to be untouchable?
No, they have to. No, she came out on Countdown, so.
Yeah. Well,
it
also,
just means it's extreme.
Yeah, with an X and a dash.
With an X and a dash.
Extreme. Call back
extreme
to last episode.
Dadju.
Hell yeah.
It's like three X's.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but.
Triple Xanadu.
He also makes statements about the X-Men and Superman. I sort of like the amount of Superman titles that there are now. Mostly because they're manageable. I can, you know, either read them or not. There's two of them, and I'm sort of happy with that, unless you count Confidential. But that's, like, delayed for 4 months now, so who knows what's going to happen with that. The X-Men books, on the other hand, that could use a bit of a trimming there. 20 years down the road, you see more or less X books. We'll start with you, Juan.
Less. Just because people are getting sick of it.
Okay. Do you see them still being an uncanny and a regular?
Yeah, they'll be adjectiveless and uncanny. But no new X-Men.
Okay.
Unless Scotty Young pulls that title out of the trash.
X-Factor, yes or no?
X-Factor I could see surviving at least until Peter David gets forced off the book, and then someone will get on the book and just bring it back to what it was in the early 90s, which I wouldn't mind, but after a while you run out of stories.
Well, I mean, that brings up an interesting point, though. I mean, they just did with Amazing Spider-Man, the whole combining the different versions of the Spider-Man book into one title. Could they do
that's
that?
What I was just going to say. Yeah.
Could they do that with X-Men? I guess, well, Brent, let me hear your take on it then.
I think if Spider-Man works out the way they want it to, then I could see them maybe not moving the X-Universe into one title like Matthew said, but maybe you could have Uncanny X-Men be the main X-Men book and then X-Men or something could be the X-Universe where you could have the new X-Men, the X-Factor characters, the 198, you know, you could do those rotating stories or something like that.
Okay.
That'd be their, like the X-Universe book.
So be sort
Excalibur
of,
could be right. in there, and they could all interact together.
Okay. So you sort of be doing what they did with what they're doing with Spider-Man Family now. Have like the entire rest of the universe that aren't being brought up in the regular book?
Sure.
Okay, cool. Yeah, well, Heath, more Superman books or less, and more X-Men titles or less?
Honestly, I don't know really about Superman books because I don't read them, so I can't really comment on that. But X-Men, I would like to see less. I cannot honestly say that that's what's going to happen, though. Because in 20 years, Brian Michael Bendis will be editor-in-chief of Marvel, and he'll have, like, Mighty X-Men, Uncanny X-Men, the New X-Men. X-Men, yeah,
the X-Men new Extreme, X-Men.
The new Astonishing Awesome X-Men.
Yeah,
yeah. Actually,
I can't believe it's not the X-Men,
dude. Tell me how awesome it would be. To have that's awesome like X-Men. Awesome X-Men. All right, that's the one adjective they haven't gone for yet. Or the
well, now you've given them the idea.
The extraneous X-Men.
Excusable X-Men.
The irregardless X-Men. The irrevocable X-Men. All right, I'm going to stop myself here before I go off onto a total tangent on just X-books that could happen.
The unfathomable X-Men.
Oh, yes. But if Bendis ends up editor-in-chief of Marvel, then Brian K. Vaughan better be editor-in-chief of DC.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
That would kick so much ass right there. Or Jeff Johns.
Just as long as it's not Grant Morrison.
Oh.
So then they're all going to fall into the sun and come out on this weird NECA universe.
Every character has a son. Every single one of them. And there's going to be an alien in every book.
But it's not real. It's all on their mind because they're strung out on peyote.
And they'll get raped by tentacles.
Because they're in an Indian spirit room. Indian spirit lodge or something.
Sweat lodge.
Sweat lodge, yeah.
The final issue, you'll find out it's all been just something happening in a back room and scalped.
Dude, the entire... DC Universe is happening inside of a
John Nail's comic book collection.
Jason Aaron's head.
No, they're all happening inside of a little snow globe.
I think it's happening inside the mind of an autistic child.
There you go. There you go. At least you knew the reference, Heath. That's good. I'm glad that at least one person on this panel knew what I was talking about.
And that autistic child's name is Grant Morrison.
Can you explain that? Explain.
You point to
the TV show Saint Elsewhere. It was I guess like a medical drama type thing. Well, the series ends. Spoilers. The series ends, and you find out that the entire Saint Elsewhere series was taking place in the mind of an autistic child, and he has this little snow globe with the St. Elsewhere hospital in it that he's been looking in the entire time.
Because autistic children love medical drama.
Yeah. In fact, Grey's Anatomy is going to end the same way. But yeah, now you know, and knowing is half the battle. Moving on.
I think Matthew did hit something on the head, though. You know, when he talked about the price of comics, Marvel and DC, what did he say, $5 or something?
Something like that, yeah.
And then indies being $8, I think that's a little too high. I know they are more expensive, but you know what? With the inflation talk we were having before, I think that kind of fits in with what we're saying there.
Well, and he also makes the comment that DC is going to be on top of Marvel. I'm not quite sure if that's going to be possible with the fact that Marvel.
The way
has,
their movies are coming out, there's no way.
Well, however, if we are talking about 20 years down the line. 20 years down the line, you might have all of those movies coming out.
It's a long time.
I mean, who knows? I mean, they could all happen very, very quickly and change the scope of things. You never know.
And you could have another Fantastic Four movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and have Galactus be in it, only better. Much better.
It'll be green this time.
Really have Galactus.
Instead of purple.
Yeah, and Green Lantern movie will probably come out, and not with Jack Black, and it'll be awesome, I swear. Well,
Jack Black will be Ganthet.
Ooh. Well, how about this Justice League movie coming out? Just to touch on this for a minute. Do you think this Justice League movie is going to do a lot for DC? I mean, probably.
They have to eliminate Superman and Batman from the fold.
But they aren't, from the looks of things.
They have to. Just because those... If they want to see their movie franchise be successful, you have to keep those two universes separate from each other.
Okay. Oh.
For one simple reason. For one simple reason, listen to me, right?
Uh-huh.
It's very, very... It's much more adult in comparison to what Bryan Singer put out. as opposed to Superman, right?
Agreed.
And if you try to put those two together, you have one very strong personality, a guy that doesn't say anything but could put out fire, and then you have all these other characters, and you don't have time to build enough characters anywhere else. They should really try to launch those movies first and then try to incorporate it into one big movie.
Okay. That I'll agree with.
I think it could could work if they left Batman out of it and had Brandon Routh Superman.
They have to leave one of them out of it.
Well, for me, I think, the rumors are that they have already signed Tom Welling to play Superman in Justice
League. That's what I've heard.
And if that's the case, well, then you're bringing up a whole new can of worms there, because which Superman is canon now? The one that grew up in the Smallville U, or the one that returned recently?
I think it's irrelevant as long as you have a good actor playing it.
Okay.
It'll take on whatever continuity the movie has.
Well, that's fine, but again, from the looks of things, they're not going to have Christian Bale playing Batman in this movie, which, to me, who the hell else do you get?
It's blasphemy. That's blasphemy, because he is Batman.
Well, you know who you get? You get George Clooney, only you have somebody good directed. Because I still think to this day, and again, I could be lambasted for this, or people could say, hey, good point. If you've seen some of George Clooney's movies...
He's a good actor.
Yeah, he could play a serious Bruce Wayne Batman if the right director's on it and doesn't, you know, destroy it.
Yep. Schumacher!
Yeah, but anyway, we've touched on that. Let's move on. Yeah, the price point. Heath, you wanted to mention something on that?
I just wanted to bring up that, did you guys know that now in the book market, if you go to a Borders or a Barnes & Noble, most Marvel books that are on the newsstand are now $3.99 mm-hmm. for the same 22-page issue of Thor or New X-Men or whatever's out. It's now $3.99 in the book market, which is rape.
You're not kidding. Jeez. Now, I think the first person that brought this up to me was John Mayer.
Yeah.
And if I remember correctly from what he said, it's that that's because they're not getting their books from Diamond, if I remember correctly, because they are in the book market, and that's why they're getting their own things like newspaper stand things / stuff that happens in books are dealt with by a different company or something.
Mm-hmm.
And
so
that would explain why that's happening. It doesn't make any sense to me either. I feel like if they're going to start sectioning off the you know, the actual bookstores from the comic book stores, they're making a big mistake. Because bookstores are as important, probably more important, to the growth of comic books than comic book stores. So if you were to charge more there for individual issues, what are you saying about the market? You're saying you do not want people to buy these individual issues.
Well, that comes from the ability to return the books. Because the bookstores, after about 3 or 4 months, they have a bookseller, or at least when I worked at Barnes & Noble, you would take your gun and you would scan it, and it would have a U or V. And you would return the book whole, or you return the book just as the cover for credit. So that's why they'll pay. They're not paying $3.99. They're paying about half of that, and they're making money as a profit. So whatever they sell, they sell. And they'll make that as a profit, and they could afford to lose the book by just sending the cover back for credit. Mm-hmm. So that's why the price point is higher in the bookstore.
Well, listen to this then. There's like a Spider-Man magazine that's got some Marvel all-ages comics in there and some stuff. That is $5.99 at places like Walmart, and it's $6.99 in the book market. Now, aren't those both returnable?
They are returnable, but the bookstores see that they'll get regular magazines in greater quantity than magazines that have to deal with specific comic books. Like if you go to a Barnes & Noble, you'll see about 3 or 4 comics buyer's guides, or 3 or 4, you know, comic related magazines where they are. You know, sometimes you'll see a Right Now or a Draw. You only see 2 or 3 copies because they only order 2 or 3. Mm-hmm. As opposed to Home and Living, where they order 27, and they'll get a greater discount on more amounts. So the price drops the more you get. So they're actually getting more of a risk by ordering less books.
Well, I wouldn't even buy from Barnes & Noble because the ones that I've seen have the comics behind the counter.
Yeah.
And they only do that for Playboys. I'm sorry. I want to look at it.
Well, really? They're behind the counter?
Yeah, the one in Orlando that I frequent the most, because it's like right by my house. Well, I've seen comics, and they have them in, like, you know, the usual, like, magazine rack thing, but it's behind the counter.
Well, here's my little rant.
And you have to ask for it specifically, and you can barely see the titles on the books sometimes.
I have to go on a little bit of a bookstore rant for a minute here. There are no bookstores in my vicinity anymore. The local mall that we have here in Brooklyn that's near me, called King's Plaza, both bookstores that were in there are now out of business. The Walden Books that was in there up to about 2 months ago used to have a little spinner rack, you know, the old-fashioned Walden Book style spinner rack they usually have there with a whole bunch of comic books on it that were usually about a month or 2 months behind. But they were still there. I would say on a regular basis, I was the only one looking at them whenever I was in there. There were maybe two or three other people in there looking at them. And the trade paperback selection was abysmal. There would be plenty of manga, but no trade paperbacks, which is...
Well, Walden Books isn't that great of a bookstore to begin with.
Sure, yeah.
It's a division of Borders.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, and also so the fact
they
that...
They could have the stock.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But also the fact that the Barnes & Nobles I've gone to haven't been much better.
Well, come to the one in Lincoln Center, and you'll see a little bit of a difference.
Okay.
Because I helped build that comic section,
okay.
And I wanted specifically to have it sectioned. JLA goes in one, do it alphabetically, mm-hmm. first by publisher, and then by title. Try to keep all the spines nice and neat, so that when people come, they'll go, "Hey, I got one. Let me get two to three." Mm-hmm. You know, what happens is most people. To get out at 12 minute, to get out at 9 o'clock, they'll start shoving shit onto the shelf, and they won't put it up. And people can't find two, and they can't find three, so they give it up. But the manga section has to be in order; mm-hmm. it has mm-hmm. to, just because of the uniform size, right? And they crack down because all the spines have numbers on it. You know, it's not like I'm looking at my wall of trades right now. Most of those trades don't have numbers on it.
Yeah.
There's specific storylines, and some of them have numbers on it. It makes it a little bit easier to find. You know, maybe if they number the trades in the future, right, and maybe a more uniform size. Mm-hmm. You know, American trades, they range in size.
Yeah.
Big and small and hardcover and premier hardcover and absolute and omnibus and blah, blah, blah. I get it. You want to make more money. But maybe if we standardize the size a little bit and standardize the spine, we could have that more uniform look that makes manga a little bit more accessible, because you know Naruto 2 has to be next to 3 and 4.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be next. Naruto 2 isn't going to be by Naruto 28.
Well,
it has to be between 1 and 3 and 4.
My perfect example of what I feel like American trade paperback should look like, the Civil War trades. They had a uniform
Agreed.
Dress. Yeah. You could point them out from a crowd. You knew exactly what you were getting, when you were getting it.
And they had a number on the back.
And they had a number on the back, yeah. That's exactly what I want to see out of them. 52 trades also are really, really
all uniform.
Excellent.
And you see, you know when you're looking at the 52 trades.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And a lot of the trades out there, you can barely tell one from the other. And that's
Well, you could tell. You look at the Why the Last Man trades.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Same thing, Fables as well.
Mm-hmm.
Vertigo does a wonderful job with their trades. Because
that's where Vertigo makes most of their money.
Agreed, yeah.
20 years from now, Vertigo may be on top. Trades.
Yeah, really?
I think so. For one simple reason. Most of Vertigo's money doesn't come from the single issues. That's why you can't find single issues of Why the Last Man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, true.
They only print so many. Yeah. But they print thousands and thousands upon thousands of trades. Right? Because they sell like hotcakes. Look at – I was talking to Brent the other day. Brent, what did you tell me? About Why the Last Man and your girlfriend.
Oh, yeah. I got her to read Why the Last Man. She read them all 9 trades in about a span of 2 weeks.
Nice.
And then we went to the comic store last week, and she was going, "Is this where the older issues are?" And she was looking for, like, the newer issues from that would be in the 10th trade that will probably come out in March or February. Uh-huh. You know, but she didn't want to get them because they didn't have the first issue. Like, I think the last trade ends at 54. They didn't have 55. They had 56, 57.
That sucks. That sucks. But well, what were you saying about the Fables trades? You said that you have a trouble actually checking which
I said,
one is
what. I have trouble reading the spines on those trades because they do like – don't they do like the wraparound cover thing?
Yeah, they do. It's kind of hard
to read.
I mean, I
know that James Jean puts out these awesome covers and stuff, but, you know, don't put it on the spine, or at least make it easier to read, because it's like most of the time it's in like white text or something.
Yeah, and I can't find it. And the numbers, I'm looking at them right now, and the numbers tend to blend in sometimes with the background.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not like the Walking Dead trades, another good example. They're all different colors.
The Spawn collections that the Image started putting out, Spawn Collection 1, is like 8 issues, or it's 10 issues or something that says Spawn, big letters, bold red letters. One.
In that tone of voice?
They actually have a guy standing there, like waiting for people to show up.
He sleeps in Brent's caddy.
Yeah.
Spawn Collection 2 is 20 issues or something, and it goes Spawn, and then in green letters, and then a big green 2 against a black background.
I really want a voice
it's
box.
Yellow.
I want a voice
and
box
three,
on these trades that go Spawn
Collection 3 says
And it's the movie Spawn. The movie trailer guy?
In green letters, oh, yeah. And it has a big green 3 on it.
In a world where a man was murdered in an alley. Alicia!
Only one man can be called.
No, his wife's
Spawn.
Name was
Wanda.
Wanda!
Wanda. All right, but I
read it,
MA. I think we get the point here, but one thing that I do have to say, though, is do we think that there is going to be a resurgence of trades in bookstores? Because, again, right now there's a hell of a lot more manga than there is trades. At the Barnes & Noble that I go to the most, which is over by, I think it's on 45th, and 7th, I think, or something along those lines, or maybe 5th, by my work. So that's basically the one that I go to. There's
the one in City Core? No, the one on Rock Center.
Yeah, there you go.
Yes, yeah, and I'm familiar. Yeah.
That one has, I'd say, two shelves devoted to Marvel, DC, and Independent, and then four shelves devoted to manga.
Shelves, are you talking levels, or like...
I'm talking complete shelves, like top, middle, bottom.
At the store I used to work at, two shelves of American comics.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
Four bookcases of manga.
Ouch. Ouch.
Well, I was in Walden Books the other day, and you know how their like shelf system, they have like, I guess they have three in a column. Mm-hmm. So you had one column of American trades, and then they had like three columns of manga. There's a lot more American trades out there somewhere.
Of course.
I don't think they're as printed as much, you know, because stuff goes out of print and you can't get it again. And then they don't keep anything old. It's all new stuff.
Well, hey, perfect example is the fact that, again, this is retreading what I said on the San Diego Comic-Con wrap-up, but a hell of a lot of the comic shops had 50% off trades there, which certainly proves that there's a hell of a lot of trades that are out there that are being overordered by the comic shops, but from the looks of things, underordered by the bookstores.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This begs the question: 20 years from now, will floppies be around? Because we're talking specifically about trades. Mm-hmm. If trades have a beachhead into the bookstore market and manage to actually infiltrate and become an equal to manga in the bookstore market, you could possibly see the beginning of the end for the single issue.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think the single issue is going to make it that much longer. I think trades are the future.
Mm-hmm. Especially if the bookstores decide, you know what, it's not cost effective to get 46 subscriptions and have only 20 people buy, and we lose 26 issues. Mm-hmm. Collect it for us, and we'll charge a little bit more, and we'll give you a percentage of the cut. And that way, they'll get 6 issues for $20 or $14, which is overpriced, right?
Yeah.
But 6 issues, let's say, for $10, like a manga, right?
Yeah.
$10, 6 issues, full color, right? Glossy paper, standard trade size for everyone. If you give us that, you may get the birth of a new market, which is the trade market, as the trade in specific, not having been printed anywhere else. You know, just storylines. No longer the 6-issue arc, and then we wait 3 months if you're DC, or you wait 2 weeks if you're Marvel, and you put out a trade.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how you guys feel about this.
Well,
I think you're right.
I think that the minute that the comic book shops die is the minute that we see them switching to trades.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the way I look at it, because The comic book shops give you a way to get your single issues. And DCBS does that, sure, but DCBS could certainly switch over to InStockTrades.com very easily.
They're the same company.
Yeah, they are. That's what I'm saying. I mean, they could just switch their devotion, because I know that they're you know, they give enough time to one as they do to the other, but I'm sure they do as much business with InStockTrades as they do with DCBS.
They'll do more because they offer you a 30 to 40% discount on trades.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
This will cause the death of the trade in the bookstore.
Yeah, and Comic Hole, like I said, Comic Hole is switching entirely to trades and back issues. That's it. Atomic Avenue is a place to get your back issues, but it's also a place to get out-of-print trades.
And look at Silver Bullet Comics when they tried it. Not the website that puts out news stories.
Mm-hmm.
The store.
Yeah.
They said, all right, you know what? Let's get rid. This is the wave of the future, right? Mm-hmm. Let's get rid of our brick and mortar. And then they couldn't meet demand.
Yeah.
They didn't expect the demand to be so great, because it's not just your local population anymore. Now you're getting people like Heath all the way out in Alabama. And let's say you're in New Jersey.
Or New Zealand.
What do you mean way out in Alabama?
That's a long way. Out in Florida.
That's a long way. That's
I'm
at least
Florida.
A 7-hour drive. Huh? Yeah, it is. Florida is like a 24-hour drive.
Yes, it is.
Alabama's more than 6 and 7. Come on.
I was trying to be nice, but thanks a lot for the spot. That's called blowing up my spot. Don't tell Brent anything.
Us New Yorkers don't know how to drive anywhere but New York. It's the way it works. I mean, come on. We don't know how to be anywhere other than like the tri-state area, man. I mean, it's ridiculous. I'm going to Pennsylvania for CGS 300. That's the farthest I go. You know?
It's a grid. It's a grid, baby. East and west and north and south. North is down uptown. South is downtown. East is east and west is west. That's how I get around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
don't take I-27 to Route 73 and then switch over to Route 49, okay? Then you're going to hang a right. No, I don't understand what you just said to me.
Yeah, have fun getting the CGS 300 one. It's going to be fun seeing you follow those directions.
You know what? I got GPS, bitch.
Damn straight. Damn skippy. There we go.
Regardless, back.
Brent, are you in Orlando?
I'm in Gainesville.
Gainesville? Okay.
Now, with the digital distribution that we talked about, how about Diamond? Is Diamond going to get competition within the next 20 years? Right now it's a solo. There are even rumors that as soon as this weekend with Baltimore Comic Con, that they're going to be announcing competition for Diamond, specifically for the indie crowd. But what will happen with Diamond distribution in the next few years? Do you see them being the only one, or do you see them being more than just that? Brent, we'll start with you.
I can see them being the only one for maybe a good long time. I mean, it's the way it's been forever, and since I've started buying comics and stuff, and I can see it keep on going until somebody comes up with a better system and convinces retailers to leave.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have to really convince retailers to leave and go to a different system and offer them things that Diamond doesn't. I mean, Diamond is, you know, improving the way they work because of the feedback, and they're afraid that somebody will start up and offer something that they don't, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's going to take a lot of time and effort for anybody to steal it away from Diamond.
Well, they're very selective, though, Diamond. I mean, they'll only go with, you know, say an independent comic that sells a specific amount, and then the other ones are sort of stuck in the wind, even though they could possibly sell more if Diamond pimped them, but they don't.
Yeah.
I mean that's an issue which I think is probably going to be filled by another smaller distribution company that deals specifically with the indies that get snubbed by Diamond. That makes sense to me. I mean, Heath, do you see another somebody coming along to perhaps fill the gap that Diamond misses?
No, but I don't see Diamond lasting that much longer either, okay. To be honest with you. I think it's – love, we've been talking about the comic market, the direct market or whatever. The local – let's say the local comic shop dying. I think when the local comic shop dies, Diamond's going to be, you know
– Yeah, they don't have a population to serve anymore.
I mean, here's where I honestly see things going. I see the local comic – shop dying, you know, I see, and if the local comic shop dies, I think the direct market's going to die. And if the direct market's going to die, then you're not going to be able to get monthly issues. And if you can't get monthly issues, then you don't go to Diamond. Everything's going to go to trade, and those trades are going to be in your Borders and your Barnes and Nobles and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I see Diamond. Well, 20 years from now, you probably won't need Diamond, because you'll just be able to get it from, you know, maybe somebody like Random House. I mean, You know, what if one of these big book companies started Penguin Books? I don't know. What if they started buying some of these, the distribution rights to some of these trades or something, or partnered up with Marvel to distribute their stuff? Get it in the book market, you know? Maybe that would be the solution to the problems we're talking about. You don't see a lot of older trades. Well, if they had more dollar behind them and you couldn't get monthly issues, trades would be everywhere.
Does that make sense? Well, you already see that happening with DC and Harcourt Brace, the company that puts out Fun Home.
Yeah.
Has already signed a contract with DC. So DC already has an inlet into the bookstore market in another way, because if you look at Fun Home, it's in the graphic novel and it's in biography, just like Persepolis.
There you go.
Persepolis is in graphic novels and in biography.
Yeah.
So if you have twice the amount of product in two different places, you can make theoretically you can make twice as much money.
Well,
that's right.
And plus, this is going to be an interesting weekend coming up, because not only is there a possibility that there might be other distributors, but there's been a rumor going around that this might be the weekend that Diamond stops charging for reorders and stops charging for sendbacks, because there have been a lot of small little comic shops and even the bigger ones that have been going not through the direct market but via the same route that the bookstores go to get their reorders, because they realize that these companies, they get the same discount that they get with Diamond the first time around, as opposed to having to pay restock fees. And that's something that Diamond does not offer right now, but they might very well be going that route to save people going elsewhere as soon as, you know, like a couple days from now. We're going to have to wait and see what ends up happening with them, because they might find a way to save themselves a little bit.
So this be like the day the Berlin Wall came down?
Pretty much. Yeah. The Berlin Wall of Marvel Comics will come falling down and just comics and all that. And
Sergei just fucked out.
And you'll see the ghost of President's Past screaming, "Tear down that wall," for the second time.
Yeah, they'll be selling rejection letters from Diamond like they were pieces of the Berlin Wall on eBay for $50.
Oh, yeah.
This is history, you guys. We're living history.
Hell yeah, bitches. Hell yeah.
And the funny thing is, we're the only people who care about it. I'm throwing that out there because comics mean a lot to us. And we know the ins and outs of comics very well. Mm-hmm. But what other hobby do you know where fans are so rabid about distributors? You know, this
we're a very small niche.
We are a very small niche, and I'm afraid we're becoming too small. What we need to focus now and in the future, in 20 years, we need to have a bigger selection of people. I hate to say it, but comics, you know, I read them as a kid, and I'm reading them now, but I don't see that many kids reading them.
Right. You're the last generation.
Because
right
of
now.
Diamond.
Yeah.
You know,
I tried to give away my comics at the summer camp, and, I mean, I got them all away, I think, but, I mean, sometimes I had some trouble.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I've been saying for episodes and episodes now that, yeah, I mean, we do have to find a way to get those younger kids involved, because we don't want to see this medium die with us. I mean, that would totally suck, you know? I'm 23 years old. I want to have, you know, an idea that, you know, when I'm 23 years older, fuck, when I'm 40 years older, that I'll be able to pass on my comics to my, you know, to kids and have them be able to then go into the stores and buy comic books, whether it be in trade, whether it be in singles. That's not even the point now. I want there to be something down the road, because I've spent so much time on this. I want people to be able to, you know, have something to enjoy as much as I've enjoyed.
Did you guys know that kids these days don't even know that Spider-Man and the X-Men and Batman are based on comic books?
Yeah.
They think they're cartoon characters.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to my little nephew. He came over and saw all my toys and stuff, and he was like, "Oh, you got Spider-Man." I was like, "Yeah, do you like to read Spider-Man?" He's like, "Read? What are you talking about?" I was like, "You know, the comic books." He's like, "Spider-Man's in comic books?" I was like, "Yeah, you didn't know that?" He's like, "Nah, I thought he was just on TV and in the movie and stuff." So, I mean, who's failing that job? Who's not getting that message out there that these characters are based on comic books?
And that's what I wanted to say, and I've said this before, and I think Ian has heard me, or I think Brent heard me with the death of Saturday morning cartoons, right now there's only one company out there that's putting out Saturday morning cartoons. That's Kids WB, right?
Yeah.
Right. With the death of the Saturday morning cartoon was the death of shows like Batman the Animated Series, the New Adventures of Batman and Robin, the Adventures of Superman, you know, the New Adventures of Batman, whatever, you know, the World's Finest.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the death of cartoons like Ghostbusters and G.I. Joe and everything else. Those are the things. And even you knew they were based on comic books because the movie told you was based on the comic book. But that's only for a very attentive child. Once you have these children there and they're sitting down in front of TV, put out an ad. If you like this story, come visit the Johnny DC section of your local comic shop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Put it in front of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I've been adamant on the fact that they should have comic books to hand out to people when they leave these frickin' movies.
Totally.
You know?
And make it a 3-page story by Ed McGuinness with whatever.
Yeah.
Make it the stupidest story ever.
How about a free comic book day type thing where they have an entire issue there for people?
Well, yeah, because the free comic book day is great, but you got to go to the comic shop to get it.
Yeah.
And what, you know, kids aren't going to go to
comic fans
shop.
Know about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, I mean,
we're servicing ourselves. We're not servicing a new population.
Yeah, do free comic book day at Borders.
Yeah, hell yeah. But, I mean, hey, I was lucky enough to see that, you know, Bulletproof Comics, what I've mentioned a couple times on the show, and I've mentioned this once before on the show, that they have a small little booth area that they can set up at my local movie theater, the UA Movie Theater in Sheepshead Bay. Every time a big movie comes out, they're there selling trades. You know, that's freaking awesome.
But that's good.
That's not anywhere else, really. You know?
Well, here's the flip side to that coin. Here's the devil's advocate side. If you're making millions of dollars on video games and licensing for lunchboxes and movies, do you care if your comic books are only selling 300,000 copies? Is that even important to you anymore?
I think you have to, because if the comic book and the core of the character isn't there, the license will be worthless.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But if the license takes on a life of its own, like it did for, let's say, Wolverine, the movie Wolverine, which is different from the comic Wolverine, and everyone here knows that. The movie Wolverine has a life of its own. It has its own history that people know as the movie Wolverine history. It's not the Logan from the comic books.
Mm-hmm.
If that license takes on a life of its own, it's no longer the core of the character. But only people who are ingrained in the culture of comics like us know that it's a different character, and that it's lost its value. Yeah. We need to find a way to ingrain upon a new population. And I keep saying this, and I keep going back to it, because we keep discussing about 20 years from now. 20 years from now, we need a population to service.
How do we do that?
We have to find a way to grow. And it has to be a grassroots effort. And unfortunately, with a totalitarian like Diamond, you know, out there, that dictates what goes where, you know, when you could reorder or anything, at least until this weekend, right? When you have a company that's that big, you face the problem of being able to proliferate the medium. And unless you have inlets into TV and regular live-action programming like Heroes, DC just got the license to Heroes. Say you're selling the comic.
Yeah.
You have the rights to the comics. Say you're selling it, right? Run an ad, a trailer, like you did for Planet Hulk, like Marvel's doing on a website, like CGS has on the forum site. Run it in front of Heroes or during Heroes.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good point, because, you know, during Heroes, they do during the commercial breaks, they'd say go online to see the Heroes online graphic novel or something like that.
And
now that DC's got it, they can say, yeah.
Well, hey, I mean, how about the fact that they showed Spider-Man 3 footage during Heroes?
Yeah.
I mean,
the cross-pollination.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they need to do that in order to survive. Every company does. Specifically, comic books need to cross-pollinate, because we don't want to get to a point where we're the old guys sitting in the movie theater for Wolverine 4 going, I remember when he was in every comic book in Marvel Comics. And the guy turns to me and goes, what's a comic book? He was in the New Avengers before there were the new Avengers.
I remember when his costume was brown.
I remember when people were superheroes.
What?
Yeah. And then somebody would say, wait a minute, he had a costume?
Yeah.
know?
It wasn't just
you
t-shirt
mean the leather jacket.
I would take remember when Spider-Man went through a period of two costumes in the span of 10 months.
No, but if we go back to what Matthew was saying and what we've said, the price of the comic, the content, the population it served, and the possible format of the comic all play into what comics will be 20 years from now. And we have to take into consideration the way these are going to evolve in order to prognosticate correctly. And right now, everything's changing so much. People want to do original graphic novels. People want to only do a 64-page comic and charge you $8 for it.
Yeah.
I understand. Mm-hmm. We have to find a way to do something in order to control these, because these are just indicators of where the market is going to go and where comics will be 20 years from now. And
so
we want. Hmm?
We want cheaper paper, cheaper prices, mm-hmm. wider distribution through bookstores. We don't want Diamond to have a monopoly on the business anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Let's rage against the machine, guys. Come on, let's do it.
You forgot Fuzzy.
I'm feeling pumped,
man.
I want Fuzzy Top Hats, because or else it's just not it's not worth it.
Could I get Fuzzy Dice?
Yes, you can get
Scratch and
well.
Sniff comics.
Didn't they try that once?
What?
Scratch and Sniff comics.
Yeah, until you pass out from the ink.
Yeah, right. Okay, at this point in the podcast, I'm going to stop things right where they are, as we are approaching about an hour and a half here, and it's a 3-hour podcast, and I kind of want to shy away from releasing 3-hour long ones like this, as I want as many people as possible to be able to listen to these episodes, and, well, obviously, when they're longer, that's harder to do. So part one here is done. Part two will be released next week with the next hour and a half or so of conversation on what will happen 20 years in the future. I want to thank Heath Holland for joining us once again. You can find his stuff over at the Geek Brunch Podcast, which is all released on the Comic Book Noise site at comicbooknoise.com. And I thank Derek Coward for hosting everybody over at comicbooknoise.com. In fact, he just got a new edition of former Comic Timing host David Price, Man of 1,000 Podcasts. He's got Marvel Noise coming up for the Deliberate Noise Network. Definitely give that a listen once it's out. And obviously, Brent and Juan, thanks as always for joining me here. Once again, we got part two coming next week, and about 2 days after that, we're going to have a live from CGS 300 episode of Comic Timing, and that one is going to be released entirely unedited live from the room, because we are lucky enough to have wireless in the room, and I want to release it straight from there, so you'll be able to capture the feel of finally having all three of us in the exact same room. How awesome is that? And probably be a couple others, more than just Juan, Raph, and myself. All depends on who's around that night, I guess. So there you have it. There's part one of episode 46. And from there, expect the relationships episode eventually, and we'll have a crossover with Geeks Unite. Also, other than the CGS 300 one, whole bunch of stuff up in the pipeline, so enjoy it. The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out the forums over at cgspodcast.com/forum. Richard graciously hosted by the Comic Geek Speak guys over at comicgeekspeak.com. We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com. And we're also proud members of the League of Comic Book Podcasters. You can find it at comicbooknoise.com/league, I believe. Not just check comicbooknoise.com for the link to the website. Please send us a review on iTunes. That would be graciously appreciated. And please vote for us on Podcast Alley. The links for the show notes and on the main page. And please dig us on dig.com. Always nice to hear from you guys on dig.com. So for Heath, for Brent, and for Juan, I'm Ian Levinson, reminding everybody out there that there's always time for comics. See you in a week for part two.
And he's down the hall and to the right past his friend's room, who he's going to go and have a conversation with.
Brent, I hope you like the fact that I raised the gain on your friend just so we could hear what she was saying while you were talking.
I listened to that. That was hilarious. And I told my roommate about it, too.
Ian saves everything. Don't you see how small it is? I can't even say that right.
Do you see how room his small is? What girl? What the boy? What? Who? Where? What? Thou? What?
Oh my god. You see what happens when you think in Spanish and you speak English?
See.
you think it's Spanish?
Yeah, I think it's Spanish. Spanish is my first language.
Okay.
Oh, alright.
Okay.
Portuguese?
All you have to say is, good job, O'Brien.
I challenge your Irish red with a Flingin Anno 1074.
Ooh, is that the one with the yeast in it?
Yeah.
Oh, hold on, I'll be right back. I'll be listening through my window waves. I'm gonna drive over to my girlfriend's house and grab the Coors Light I bought 2 weeks ago.
Fuck you, man.
It's a dry dorm.
No, I could have beer in here, but it has to be on my side of the room. And seeing as how I've only got a cooler and the roommate has the fridge, I'm out.
Wait. Sorry. Banging pots in the background there. Let me avoid that.